This week, it's RSA Conference 2021. In our first segment, we welcome Joe Noonan, General Manager at Unitrends, to discuss Unified BCDR, why backup alone is no longer enough. In our second segment, we welcome Jonathan Nguyen, Vice President Field CISO Team at Fortinet, to discuss building a unified security fabric. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Week.
We all know that cyber criminals have the upper hand, and the most advanced ones have already made it past your defenses. When advanced threats like SolarWinds Sunburst compromise your business, you need a strategy. Tune into Extra Hop Session, Building a CISO Response Strategy to Advanced Threats at RSA Conference on May 19th to learn strategies to build resilience against advanced threats. Find session details and learn more about Extra Hop's presence at the 2021 RSA Conference at securityweekly.com/extrahop-RSAC.
Media Ops presents DevOps Connect, May 19th at RSA Conference. Christopher Krebs, former director of the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, will keynote in a live fireside chat with host Alan Schimmel, which will also include Q&A with the audience. Besides an exciting keynote, you can also attend 30 other sessions featuring a powerhouse lineup of DevSecOps experts. Sign up for this free event now.
Cyber risk and compliance automation is finally here. Legacy GRC systems cannot support the powerful, real-time automation and oversight that organizations require to take risks that matter to succeed. CyberSync continuous control automation ingests data from the IT GRC stack to update controls against regulatory requirements and risks in real time, delivering insights and visibility. See how members of the Fortune 500 are saving millions annually by visiting securityweekly.com/CyberSync.
Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 217, recorded May 18th, 2021. I am your host, Matt Alderman, here in studio. Oh, it feels so good to be here. And joining me in studio is Mr. Jason Albuquerque.
Alderman,
cheers, my friend. It's been so long.
It's so good to be here.
Oh my gosh, 9 months and counting.
So glad to see you, my friend, and it's so good to be in studio.
Yes, Paul is out today on kid duty, which means joining us remotely is my second co-host for today, Adrian Sanabria. Adrian, welcome.
Thanks, virtual cheers. Looking forward to my first trip up there, getting to be in studio also.
Yeah, we got to figure out how we get all back together for Black Hat, whether it's in Vegas or here or whatever we're going to do. We'll figure that out. We got a few months. If you want to stay in the loop on all things Security Weekly, visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher or our YouTube channel, sign up for our mailing list, join our Discord server, and follow us on our newest live streaming platform, Twitch. Also, in our May 27th webcast at 11 a.m. Eastern, we'll explore the latest attacks against DNS and the latest techniques that make it possible to discover and disrupt those attacks. In our June 3rd webcast at 11 a.m. Eastern, you will learn about pen testing tools and why every organization should be using them. Visit securityweekly.com/webcast to register now. If you missed any of our previously recorded webcasts or technical trainings, they are available for your viewing pleasure at securityweekly.com/on-demand. This segment is sponsored by Unitrends. To learn more, please visit securityweekly.com/Unitrends. Joe Noonan has spent over 17 years delivering hardware and software technology solutions for virtualization, cloud, data protection, and disaster recovery. He has worked for Unitrends since 2010, driving its software product strategy for data protection, recovery, automation, and cloud disaster recovery and migration. Joe has held roles in developing technology alliances, product management, and marketing, and now serves as the general manager for Unitrends. Joe, welcome to Business Security Weekly.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We're going to talk about, my co-hosts have already said this is a great topic. We're going to talk about unified business continuity and disaster recovery. And we're going to talk a use case. But before we get there, let's just back up a second and think about business continuity disaster recovery. This is a concept that's been around for 20 plus years, but yet is not a very sexy topic for some organizations. And so what are some of the challenges you see in the market right now and with customers around, you know, what are they doing with business continuity and disaster recovery?
You know, I think it's interesting you say it's not the sexiest topic in the world. Nobody really wants to do it. You know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like an insurance policy. You never really want to have to exercise it or even pay it or manage it, right? And that's kind of the big piece around all of this in terms of the challenges, really, when you think about it. It's that these days, data is kind of moving all over the place, especially as you look at what COVID did with everybody's accelerated cloud strategy. So with the fact that it's so fragmented, it's under attack more than ever, and it's harder to manage more than ever as a result. So this thing that's not sexy, that's not fun, nobody wants to do, most of the innovation, I think, in this space really is starting to focus on reducing time spent, automating away a lot of the problems that are out there, and most importantly, doing a lot of the extra stuff in the technology to make sure it works. Because if you think about a lot of the successful attacks that have been out there where people thought they had backups and they didn't, or, you know, there was a different reason where the backups had also gotten hit by, you know, some form of malware attack. You know, that's really where the success comes from the bad guys. So it may not be the sexiest topic, I realize it, but, you know, it certainly saves a few people's jobs when it works well.
But when the stuff hits the fan, everybody wishes it was sexy.
Exactly right. What's interesting, in 1996, so I worked 7.5 years in nuclear power. And when I left the nuclear power field, I went to oil and gas. Mm. And one of the projects they gave me back then was to build a disaster recovery plan for the Alliance Refinery, which sits on the Delta of the Mississippi, south of New Orleans. Yeah. And the purpose for that was to have a disaster recovery plan in place in case a hurricane came up the Gulf and hit the plant. Like, how would we get the plant back online? And I remember building the first disaster recovery plan because they didn't have one, right, in 96.
Right.
And so we built the plan. We're thinking about all the aspects of the plan and where the backup facility was going to be and how to get all the systems back online. Well, then Katrina hit. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know this for 100% fact, but I'm pretty sure it's my disaster recovery plan they pulled out of the file, because who would have updated it, right? I mean, plans never change, right? But it's an important part. And you saw certain industries think about these plans. Mm-hmm. But now with ransomware attacks.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. If you're not thinking about backup and recovery, mm-hmm. I mean, how susceptible do you want to be?
Right.
And by the way, that's an amazing point you make with that story, is a lot of people put so much effort into getting the plan in place and then it sits there, right? It's a checkbox. Mm-hmm. I got it done. I'm good for the next 10 or 15 years because I don't ever expect to have to use this thing. And then, you know, like you said, now we have new threats. The hurricane isn't the big thing we're all worried about anymore. It's really that, you know, obviously the security threats that are out there can hit you at any time.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's harder now. I mean, that was a very distinct site-built plan.
Yep.
And its systems don't change very often. I mean, if I'm thinking about this from a corporate perspective for a second, Jason, right? Think about all the technology changes that are happening daily, weekly, monthly basis. How do you keep these things updated?
If you're not reviewing your BCDR plan at least quarterly in testing, you're out of the loop, right? Because systems are changing so much. We're migrating so much to the cloud. We're upgrading systems so much. Processes are changing. I mean, this is the most rapid business innovation that I've seen in decades, honestly. And at the end of the day, we need to be able to keep up with it, right? Because, you know, part of my past is, I worked for a data, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I worked for a disaster recovery firm. You know, it used to be Veritas back in the day, right? Yeah. Symantec bought them out. Part of my job was a global engineer. I speak Portuguese, so I was a global engineer. And you literally would have New York firms, CIOs, crying on the phone because they're losing millions an hour for the downtime, right? But the question was, did you prepare for that? And the answer was always no. Now save me, right? Do you want to be in that position? And you're talking like, this is 2003, 2004, right? And they don't have that resiliency plan. And they put all their ducks in a row saying, hey, that plan that's been on the shelf for 10 years will treat us fine. But never go through the exercise of testing, never go through the exercise of making sure their plans are updated, right?
Right. So Joe, I'm sure you've heard this before. I mean, this isn't uncommon. I think a lot of it depends on the size of the organization as well, right? I mean, the financials and the healthcares might do a better job of this, but I mean, if you're a small to medium business, my guess is this is not like top of mind. It might be now because of ransomware, but it probably wasn't before all these ransomware attacks.
You know, I think that's kind of the thing is, you know, prior to COVID and prior to ransomware becoming as prolific as it has been, we saw people putting together more of a checkbox strategy. Mm-hmm. These days, honestly, the last couple of years, we've been seeing this space grow quite a bit. We've been seeing the activity around more advanced technologies around DR become the big drivers of purchases in the whole backup and DR realm, right? It's not just, can I make sure that I have things backed up? Can I make sure that I get things on tape or something mm-hmm. on site in that fashion? Now people are like, look, I need an updated strategy. I have data in three different places mm-hmm. under three different platforms. I need to make sure it's all protected. I got to have something off site. And that's kind of the driver now. Like they can be happy with what they're doing on the backup side, but we're seeing DR and the security side of things is really, I think, one of the biggest drivers where it's a part of the security strategy.
Yeah.
Makes it a bigger part of the business, which gives it the budget that it needs. So I'm happy to, you know, actually being a vendor in this space, happy, but happy for the organizations that are starting to plan a heck of a lot more. You know, when we used to survey people, they might test once a year.
Yeah. And Joe, honestly, you know, I noticed a shift when CISO started getting involved in the BCDR sure. planning. That was a shift in mentality, right? Because now the security professionals, it's not only on the IT department, right? Now the security professionals have come in here and thrown some weight around saying, hey, wait a minute, this is a big deal because if we have to get into recovery mode, we better be quick, right? So organizations want high availability and resiliency. At the end of the day, that's what they're looking for. And now you're getting the board level look at it. Now the board is actually saying, you know, to their mm-hmm. companies, hey, what are we doing around BCDR? Because I heard of this ransomware thing and I don't think I want to get caught by that, right? So how are we doing, right? So now you're starting to get that pressure.
And there's so many gotchas if you don't get into the weeds on this. Like if you don't actually do the testing, you know, I used to tell clients like, you know, if you've done the plan and you haven't done any actual testing, assume you're maybe 50% of the way there, you
maybe,
know, because
maybe,
there's
going
to be a bunch of other stuff you forgot. Like, oh, we haven't updated the call tree, so we're calling the wrong people roles have changed. You know, they're no longer the sysadmin. Somebody else is. I don't even know his number. Does anybody know his number?
right. Why do we have a number for the storage provider from 10 years ago?
Right.
We decommissioned that entire architecture, right?
Yeah, that whole NAS and SAN system, it's an S3 bucket right?
Exactly. That's it. Absolutely.
And then, you know, I remember the first, I was in the same place for a large credit card processor. I put together our first disaster recovery plan. And I remember our main CMS database. Mm-hmm. We had a proprietary customer management database and based on Oracle. And just with somebody 24/7 pushing in tapes to recover that database, if we were in a worst case scenario, it had been 29 or 30 days since the last full backup, it would have taken 14 days of somebody just round the clock, just pushing tapes in, you know, before you could even bring up the database, which was before you could bring up the, you know, all the stuff that connected to the database, you know, and that's without actually pulling the trigger. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted to mention, you know, I think one of the best cases I ever saw, I had a client, you would never guess, you know, that they had their stuff this much together. One of the most boring retail clients, you'll find them in almost every mall. You know, they sell a lot of easily personalized stuff. And once a quarter, they would fail to DR, which was you know, halfway across the country, you know, in the Midwest, and they're based on the East Coast. Run for a week and then fail back to production.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another big piece there is like, even if you make it fully to your DR environment, now you have to get all that data back into production.
That's right.
And that's a whole nother set of tasks mm-hmm. that aren't necessary to get you to the DR environment in the first place. So that's a big checklist, right?
Yeah, it is. And not all solutions are equal, which is why we wanted to talk mm-hmm. about this use case that Joe Unitrends experienced, because this particular case is, I think, interesting because they had two different providers in there and fell victim to a ransomware attack. So why don't you give us a little background on the scenario. And then let's talk about some of the differentiators on on what happened and why it's important to think about also the solutions you're using in this space.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to the BCDR strategy now when you start to take into account something like ransomware. There really is. There's a lot of additional innovations you have to look forward to and a lot of different use cases to plan for. So, you know, not too long ago, literally just a few weeks ago, we ended up helping a great customer of ours who's a decent sized customer, a couple hundred terabytes, maybe about 700 virtual machines. We helped them through a pretty nasty attack. Was kind of interesting because they did have multiple vendors, and this kind of goes to the fragmented piece we were talking about before. I mean, these days we're seeing people run up to three different vendors to protect their data. And, you know, sometimes you can think, hey, it's not too bad to have, you know, your eggs in different baskets, but this particular scenario, one part of the environment was protected by vendor A, the other part was protected by us. And, you know, one of the interesting things about their scenario is the other vendor kind of looked like everything else in the production environment. It was based on Windows, had the same patching schemes, the same antivirus and other security tools, all running the same on that particular backup environment and DR environment that they had in production. So naturally, you know, when the attack happened and it managed to seize all the data and encrypt everything in the production environment, guess what else got encrypted, right?
Yep.
The other backups. All the backups did as well. And we were lucky in this case because, you know, we do make sure that we deploy differently than what you're typically going to see in any production environment. We are Linux-based, but people can attack Linux. We all know that. That doesn't save you. It's just that being a lockdown appliance, we're not opening anything up that we don't need for our process. And just as a result, that simplifies everything around securing us. And all updates, security updates are driven by our update process. And that just allows everything to look differently. And then on top of it, to add additional resilience, which is always key, because no matter what, something can happen to those local backups. Getting data offsite, they're leveraging one of our cloud services, which basically it looks like a totally different network. It's in our cloud infrastructure. We have all the certifications necessary for what they needed, but being a different network and the fact that the data in the cloud in this scenario for our service is immutable, meaning if you get hit on-prem, there's nothing on-prem that can go and do anything to the data that lives in the cloud. Once it lands there, you can't modify it. You can access it and bring it back down, but you can't modify it. So all those things kind of come into play as best practices, just on the deployment side of this, right? You know, most people backup used to be, hey, you know, and you mentioned Veritas, you know, popular scenario. It's another server. You run it like other servers. You manage it like other servers. It just does the protection. And, you know, some folks do a lot to secure that differently. Not everybody does. And, you know, we were lucky to look different and behave differently in that environment for the added resilience.
Right. Now, but I'll say the legacy TOS and the tech methodologies don't work anymore, right? I mean, you were talking about immutable storage. That's huge, right? You know, automation and orchestration around your BCDR plan. How do you automate testing, right? Because again, you can't always have the humans doing that kind of stuff. So you need some level of automation or orchestration these days to make sure you have some type of a cycle or job testing it for you, right? And then alerting the humans when, you know, when something's happening. So, you know, that's a huge differentiator when I started looking at the company is you have that recovery testing, right? You have incredible reporting and metrics you can provide. And then the immutable storage is absolutely awesome, right? It's literally segregating your backup and making it untouchable away from the network. So that way, when the stuff hits the fan, it's accessible and you can actually recover.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a huge shift in strategy too. Mm-hmm. Your point there that, you know, back in the day we were lucky if the backups would even work.
We were lucky if they would back up correctly without errors.
And so we were just crossing our fingers that the backups would work. Mm-hmm. Now we have adversaries trying to break them on purpose.
Right.
So not only do those backups have to be more resilient, our whole strategy around how we take the backups, how we store them, you know, and the infrastructure we use to do all that has to be prepared for an attack. And, you know, one point in time, you know, like we snicker at anything that even sniffed of obscurity, security by obscurity. But it's a huge advantage for us that in a lot of attack scenarios, they're depending on our environment being what they expect it to be.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, they're expecting it to be Windows. Mm-hmm. If you look at a lot of the ransomware out there, it uses the built-in Windows APIs to mm-hmm. do encryption. You know, I last study I saw said over 50% of ransomware out there, if you just disabled, you know, the built-in Windows encryption mm-hmm. API, you would break their ransomware. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's actually some very easy things yeah. you can do to look different, you know, to be resilient through those attacks, you know, and throw off the attackers.
You know, and I think the automation piece and the orchestration piece that you mentioned was spot on, yeah. you know. A lot of the paranoia we see in customers that are coming from other solutions, a lot of it is not, I'm worried about backups failing. I'm worried that they're just not happening, right? There's yeah. that dreaded skipped backup where nothing's mm-hmm. happening. You don't get alerts for that very mm-hmm. often unless you have solutions that have thought of these types of things, right? So that's where a lot of the automation comes into play, not just to test it and make sure it's going to work, because that's one piece to it, right? I get good backups yep. and now I need to make sure that they're all going to be recoverable the mm-hmm. way I want. And you're never going to do that manually, right? So automation is key. And we're starting to see people test weekly with automation.
Of course.
Sometimes daily for their critical systems.
Of course, because doing it manual is a keep the lights on task for the staff. And right. And it's one of those things where when there's more important, strategic, sexy things to do,
right?
The humans are going to focus on that.
Right.
But you're bringing sexy back because you can do automation orchestration for BCDR. Right. So that's awesome.
That is a sexy piece of it. You know? and the idea of a lot of the work that people are spending just making sure that it's all working outside of just the testing, but I'm just coming in and I'm looking at every single machine and making sure there's green, you know, and
yeah.
even that is painful to do, right? People are spending more than a quarter of their day just right. doing that these days. It's kind of nuts when you think about it, but if you have a decent sized environment mm-hmm. or many different environments that are scattered, it's a lot of work, right? So that's where
yeah.
intelligent alerting and increasing the monitoring innovation around how you're ultimately detecting mm-hmm. anything. For instance, you know, really at this point, you need something that's looking at the recovery strategy and alerting against the recovery strategy, mm-hmm. right? Not do backups fail, but are they not happening and have they not happened in a time that's reasonable for my objectives?
Mm-hmm.
And being able to flag that, whether it's the local side of things, whether it's for getting the data offsite, and being able to kind of have that enforcement of your recovery yeah. point objectives, which is really just the time between, you know, your backups, how much data you're willing to lose. That's a big piece as well, because it'll catch anything, whether yeah. application software on the backup side is hung, whether it's too busy and backups aren't happening. It's not just the failures that people are worried about. And you yeah. see that with a lot of the big ransomware attacks where people went mm-hmm. back and said, oh, I haven't had any alerts. They go and try to recover and they didn't get any backups
either. Yeah, right. Now we, you know, you're making a good point there, because we talked about, you know, pressure from the executive team on having a solid BCDR strategy. We talked about pressure from the board because they're getting visibility. One thing we didn't talk about, right? And you kind of, you know, you sparked something when you said, you know, RPO and RTO, vendor risk management these days, they're asking the BCDR questions. So if you're doing business with a customer, they want to know your RPO and RTO times, yep. right? Time to recovery. So their vendor risk teams are getting smart and saying, all right, show me, prove it to me, show me your testing, show me the results, show me your reporting, right? So when I was reading about your innovations and being able to have that metrics, right, and have that reporting function where you can handle the vendor risk management questions, you can handle the compliance questions, and you can show them evidence that you actually are testing, right? And you can prove your RPO and RTO times. It saves you from a compliance perspective. It saves you from a vendor risk management perspective. So that's a huge, huge benefit, because a lot of times that's a manual process to prove it and show evidence.
And you got to show it, right?
You
Nobody's going to believe it until you can show it these days. So it's just that's so important now. Mm-hmm. And it really is the peace of mind that a lot of folks are craving and have to have in order yeah. to even make a decision now. It's a big piece of it. Mm-hmm.
I think there's also a couple other lessons learned out of this particular use case. I mean, the first one we just talked about, system has to look different so it doesn't fall victim to the mm-hmm. ransomware attack. But there's a few other things from a recovery perspective you also learned. And I want to make sure we cover those, because I think people have to understand, okay, I had a ransomware attack. I have valid backups. I know that they're good. But recovery isn't as simple as pushing a button and restoring. So Joe, give us some of the background into kind of what happened on the recovery side, because it's a very interesting set of circumstances.
Super interesting. I hadn't heard this type of feedback before, so it was eye-opening for me. And an opportunity like this to talk about it is great for education. But cyber insurance becomes part of these strategies. Mm-hmm. And great call by, you know, this organization in bringing that on board and making that a part of the strategy when they brought us into the fray. What was kind of interesting is it wasn't until this attack that they learned some of the ins and outs of what is required to get paid on your claim. And the folks on the claim side basically said, you can't recover right away. I need you to run these tests that we certify in order to make sure that you have a clean system mm-hmm. that you're recovering to. Kind of makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. In the end, they don't want you to recover to something that might have dormant ransomware that just spurts, you know, just spurs back up in a couple of weeks or something like that, right? So I hadn't heard anything like that before, and it was really interesting to see that type of scenario. And, you know, great advice for anybody that's involved mm-hmm. in this is ask those questions up front. What's the process that we're going to have to go through if something happens? And what we were lucky to be able to do, and it goes back to the testing and using that same automation and orchestration, being able to spin up that data without moving it and wasting the time of doing recoveries yet, mm-hmm. we were able to basically automate labs. And these labs were, you know, basically running the carbon black scans that could actually go and do the proof that was necessary for the cyber insurance firm. And then once things tested fine, automate the recovery right after that. So we were able to script mm-hmm. all that and work through the automation and get that done. So it's kind of interesting. You see, not only is testing important, but being able to access the backups and do other things with them while it's still just living there as a backup on backup storage adds value in ways you don't often realize or mm-hmm. plan for. And nobody planned for this, but, you know, fortunately we were able to help them in that whole process. Yeah, otherwise it would have taken a lot longer to get the recovery done.
Exactly. And I think that's the important point is part of your recovery plan. Yeah. You have to understand, if I have a cyber insurance policy and if I have to bring in a third party to certify mm-hmm. the clean recovery point, what does that add to my RTO?
Absolutely.
Right? 100%. My recovery time. Because that's a piece of the equation now that you have to think about in your mm-hmm. recovery plan to say, wait, we have to, you know, engage this firm. They have to come in and do their yeah. steps. That's going to impact your RTO metrics.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you can't even restore until mm-hmm. they give you the green light.
Yeah,
and I think that's the really interesting point.
All of a sudden, a whole nother different set of conversations there. Now you're talking to that third party and saying, what can we do to get you in and out of here more quickly?
Yeah.
You know, and preparing for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the bureaucracy, it's amazing the bureaucracy that goes around the incident response processes when you bring in your cyber liability insurance. They assign a fiduciary, right? They assign an attorney who's responsible for okaying every dime you spend. And by the way, making that certification. So not only do you have the incident response team saying, all right, you restored, it looks clean, good to go. Hey, fiduciary, now you need to put this stamp on there because you're legally liable for the insurance company to put the stamp on it. So now you have an attorney having to, right? So think about the time it takes to get all that done. It's just, it's part of the process because again, the insurance company, they don't ever want to lose money, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
Well, they're going to do the diligence.
I can see the insurance side of it though, because we've all heard those stories where somebody thought it was fine, they restored everything, and then they went through the whole damn process
chasing their tail.
You know, they didn't do eradication mm-hmm. well enough, the eradication stage of 100%. The incident response.
Exactly right. And I still think, Joe, even with that step in the process, you still got the customer back up in a pretty timely fashion.
Yeah, once we got through some of the basics there, it was about a day to a day and a half, you know, and this That's is awesome. For an environment that was about 600 machines that had to go through the scanning process and everything like that. So, you know, it was a good success story mm-hmm. in being able to keep them going. Different organizations, that day and a half could be a big deal, right? So it just goes to making sure that we really do plan for this type of disaster.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this is a part of the recovery plan. All these new things. It's not like the thing you dusted off back in the day.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
It's new.
And I'll say that recovery time is absolutely amazing. I've seen organizations crippled for weeks, fully restored for weeks. So a day and a half, a couple of days, that's amazing.
I actually got a really interesting quote from the customer when we were talking, saying, you know, had they had to do all of this with the other solution that was in place, they'd still be recovered.
Oh, absolutely.
And it wasn't a thing made in jest. I mean, they were serious. Like, it would take weeks in a lot of cases. So
yeah, and I think the challenge was the other vendor never recovered. Because that's they were right. fully compromised. So they never got the data back from the other provider. So they did lose data, but not on systems that were covered by Unitrends, which I, you know, is just another learning lesson, I think, through this as well.
Absolutely. So at that point, you know, all your eggs in one basket might have been a little bit better if you picked the right basket. but that's part of this, obviously. And, you know, I think unifying this whole BCDR strategy, it's a big thing to it, right? In terms of saving time, getting all the automation in place that you need, getting the right data security of your backups, and then also having all the extra use cases that come in handy with handling these attacks. Trying to do that through a couple of different solutions, you know, just because you might have some data in Office 365 versus some data on-prem, you know, it ends up being, I think, more work in the long run, the more disjointed that that solution set ends up being.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was a great story. Joe, thank you so much for joining us on Business Security Weekly.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
It was awesome. To learn more about Unified Business Continuity and Disaster Recovery, please visit securityweekly.com/Unitrends. We're going to take a quick break and then welcome Jonathan Nguyen from Fortinet.
Cyber criminals are using social engineering, loaded with urgency and fear, to successfully prey on victims, your employees, or your customers. Protect your Office 365 email from today's most sophisticated attacks with Barracuda Email Threat Scanner. It's a free tool to help protect your business from these hard-to-detect attacks. The Barracuda Email Threat Scanner uses artificial intelligence to hunt and eliminate Office 365 email threats. Find the cybersecurity threats hiding in your Office 365 email right now. Get your free email threat scan at securityweekly.com/Barracuda. We're proud to announce CISO Stories, a new podcast series in partnership with Cybersecurity Collaborative and Cyber Reason. CISO Stories features the candid perspectives and experiences of frontline senior security executives and dives deep into timely security topics. CISO Stories is hosted by Todd Fitzgerald, VP of Cybersecurity Strategy at Cybersecurity Collaborative, and Sam Curry, Chief Product and Security Officer at Cyber Reason. Listen weekly as they speak with extraordinary CISOs by visiting securityweekly.com/CSP.
Welcome back to Business Security Weekly. I am your host, Matt Alderman, joined by Jason Albuquerque and Adrian Sanabria. Security Weekly is excited to announce that we will be at InfoSec World 2021 in person. Yes, I said in person, October 27th to 29th, 2021. This year, our annual partnership with InfoSec World is extra special as we are both business units under the CyberRisk Alliance brand. What does that mean for Security Weekly listeners and InfoSec World attendees? You'll get to see and hear from many of the Security Weekly team at the event, and you will save 20% off your World Pass. Visit securityweekly.com/ISW2021 to register using our discount code. Do you have a specific guest or topic that you want us to cover on one of the shows? Submit your suggestions for guests by visiting securityweekly.com/guests and completing the form. We review those suggestions monthly and we'll reach out to you once reviewed. This segment is sponsored by Fortinet. To learn more, please visit securityweekly.com/Fortinet. As a cybersecurity thought leader with 25 plus years of experience in all aspects of risk management, Jonathan is a global security advisor and field CISO lead at Fortinet. With extensive experience in security and business continuity, Jonathan's work at Fortinet is focused on strategy, data analytics, and helping enterprises with digital transformation for security, from the IoT edge across enterprise networks and to the hybrid clouds. Jonathan, welcome to Business Security Weekly.
Hey, thanks for that intro. Wow, that could be written on my epitaph and it'd be awesome.
I modified it slightly. I got to bring that personalization into it. We're going to talk about the unified security fabric, and I want to start with a quick story.
Yeah.
Circa 1997, 1998, I started in the industry in 96. I think you just mentioned right before the show, 98.
Yeah.
I remember Symantec coming out with this concept of this kind of unified layer way back then in the late 90s. Yeah. I remember I was at KeyBank at the time, and I remember this presentation. I remember like all the hype around this unified like fabric kind of discussion. And then for like 15 years, like nothing happened.
I was just going to say, Matt, I worked for them in 2003, 2004-ish time frame, and we had nothing like that.
Anyways, so I thought it was interesting that we're going to talk about the unified fabric, because what I think is interesting is Fortinet's actually built a unified security fabric, which, you know, Jason, you know the Fortinet folks really from your previous employer. Yep, congratulations on the new job, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So let's first start, I think, with the basics, Jonathan. Like, why a unified security fabric? Why do we need to think about this unification discussion?
So a security fabric is what we've been trying to build since day one. You know, my first packet filtering firewall, my stateful inspection firewall, my first IDP, IDPS, my first SEM, SIEM, et cetera. We kept adding things and trying to integrate them. And then we brought in analytics and sandboxes and third-party intelligence feeds, because we were all trying to build something that would be broad enough to span our operating environments, that would be integrated so that we can collect and share information, and then automated so that we can do something with it at speed and scale. And I remember, as you said, I was on Cisco's advisory board back in the day when they rolled out the self-defending network, right? And I think where we are now, though, we're at the cusp of something that really delivers on that promise, that is predictive and proactive. And the reason why it's really important now is that you really can't think about computing, networking, and security as separate operating silos. I think in conversations with every CISO in the last 15 months, it's been, hey, I've got to deliver on business outcomes. I've got to create new experiences and interactions with my brand. And all the while, I have to deliver security and privacy at high levels as well. And none of that works unless the networking, which is now SD-WAN, is optimized and adaptive and integrated with your security. And all that understands what's happening in your computing environment, which is now spread across, you know, your legacy data centers and public clouds. So yeah, the reason why a real security fabric as opposed to point defense products and disaggregated platforms is needed, it's because all three of those pillars are now really integral.
Yeah. And Jonathan, I mean, you make an incredible point, because part of why as an operational team, we decided to go, because we weren't just a partner for Fortinet, we operationalized it and used it as an example, right? The struggle that we were having, the struggle we were hearing from a lot of our customers, was the fact that they had so many siloed products, and we had so many siloed products that we couldn't get context across all of the different areas of the network, right? Yeah. So we started implementing Fortinet firewalls, next-gen firewalls. Then we went to FortiEDR. Then we implemented FortiSIM. Then we went to FortiSwitches. Then we went to FortiAPs, right? We're having conversations around transitioning to the FortiSD-WAN platform, because the more and more we brought into the ecosystem, the better context across the entire enterprise we started to get, right? Instead of having these best-of-breed point solutions that don't talk to each other, we found more business value out of having one unified ecosystem across everything.
Yeah, because you know what really gives CISOs anxiety? It's lack of visibility.
Yes.
The delta between what you believe is actually happening in your network, between what is actually happening, is typically the delta between the attacker and the defender, right?
And it's not good enough to say, hold on a second, I'll get you that by tomorrow. Like, I can't, as a CISO, right, as an executive, I can't deal with that. Well, I'm sorry, but our systems are so siloed that it's going to take me time to get that answer for you. No, I don't want that, right? Yeah. I want that answer. I want that context as quick as I can possibly get it.
Yeah. And so it's pretty funny, because not only is the technology siloed, the organizations are siloed, right? There are cultural differences between networking people and security people and DevOps people. But everything right now, look at our SLAs. When I first started in MSS, we were talking about 24 hours, right? Then it went down to 30 minutes. Then now we're at sub-millisecond SLAs, because that's what the speed of business is at, right? So you don't have the time to try to triage things and 45 minutes later make a decision to mitigate, right? So you bring in tier two, tier three. By the time it's done, you're already owned. And so I think you really do need something that's integrated and automated, designed to work together, because none of those point to products were actually designed to work together.
So. Right. And something that has an open fabric that allows you to tie in other products, right? Because that was the beauty as well, is that I get it. I'm not going to be able to go Fortinet across everything, because we made investments, right? And those investments have a life cycle. But the fact that open fabric allowed me to tie in other systems as well to bring in that context,
And that's one of the reasons I came here, because I still have scars on my backs about doing third-party technology integration, right?
Yeah.
I'm making sure that my collectors were integrated, my parsers were working, that everything was working together. And the amount of money and time that I spent on doing that, I said, wow, if I'm working with a strategic vendor, why aren't they doing the integration? Let me focus on writing content and operating the technology. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, you really begin to improve security and just reduce the stress load on the teams. You know, there was a Forbes article that came out about a year and a half ago that said, what, one out of every six of us, 18%, medicate using alcohol or drugs. And medicate is a specific term of art. It connotes functional alcoholism, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
As so Jason and I raise a glass of scotch just to that statement for you.
It's 7:50 on a Tuesday, my friend. Come on.
I only have hot tea.
That really resonates too. You know, I remember the last time I was on the enterprise side, you know, one of the things I noticed that was dysfunctional is you had the WAF person and you had the SIM person.
Right.
And you had like everybody, like nobody was actually doing security. They were doing operational work within one particular point product. Mm-hmm. And nobody was really looking at the big picture.
Yeah.
And the API that connected all those fabrics was email. You know, literally, we would we would have the, you know, the WAF guy emailing IP addresses to the firewall guy to update a blacklist or something like that.
Yeah, that's swivel chairing, right?
It was ridiculous.
No,
manual swivel chairing, manual mitigation is kind of like what they did on the Titanic, right? They manually closing watertight doors. It doesn't work.
Right, and it's funny that you mentioned that because, you know, with the fabric that we had, you know, at my previous job, we had not only the security folks in Fort EDR, we had the help desk folks. We gave them the power and the ability to actually do some level of work within Fort EDR. So now it's like a shared responsibility, right? Not only are the security folks in the next gen firewalls, but our networking folks are in the next gen firewalls, right? And they all knew their jobs and they all knew what they needed to do. It became a shared responsibility. Our engineering team became security professionals, right? Our operations team became security professionals by nature. Right, because we had the fabric, we allowed the access, we trained them on how to use it, and it was just a beautiful ecosystem, and it works so well.
And then you have the same goals finally, right?
That's
it. You have network 100%. Performance and security performance and application performance to deliver on an outcome and an experience.
That's it, and everybody's driving to the same outcome, Jonathan.
Yeah, that's the only thing that the board is asking the CISO, CIO, whoever has responsibility. It's that, how are you enabling the outcome and the experience, and also how are you creating new interactions? Because one of the things that came out during the last 15 months is that we all have these millennial expectations that we're going to be wowed every time we interact with that brand, right? And so now the security teams are being asked, what we're really concerned about is, can you deliver on that experience and the revenue, the agility, the innovation, those ITIL metrics, you know, mean time to this, mean time to that. It's interesting and it's important, but that's not the board level is really focused
that's right.
on.
Right? That's right. Right. And making sure security is not a roadblock to the business.
Yeah.
That's a big piece, right? I mean,
so,
honestly.
So that's a great example. If you can use security to unlock that omni-channel engagement model, and you make things like authentication without passwords, and you make it painless, and you enable a person to interact with a brand by through Zero Trust, for instance, they can access any number of applications, and it's a two-way stream where you have everything from smart signage through proactive and smart contracting and maintenance, you really unlock business value. And that's how I've seen security teams use security to create a business impact. Yeah. And that's very different than 18 months ago.
Leverage it to be a differentiator.
Yeah.
Right.
I
mean, in our industry, we have been a bolt-on security after the fact industry. We just have. Right? Technology moves, we create a solution, we bolt it on. Jonathan, how do we change the mindset, right? Because we got to think about security as an integrated component to our technology stacks, not as an afterthought, not as a bolt-on, because we'll never get to the promise of unified security fabric if we continue to do what we're doing right now.
Yeah. So it starts now because we have digital transformation and this massive shift to cloud and edge compute. And this is our opportunity to really get it right, because the shift to cloud also is a shift in architecture to SD-WAN, which also shifts security towards things like endpoint protection and edge security in form of SASE. this is how we finally get it together, whether we do it through consolidation of technologies on our FortiGate firewalls that have both the security stack and the SD-WAN management capabilities. And then you need to ensure that those elements are on that LAN edge, WAN edge, data center edge, and cloud edge. I think the next 5 years, as we re-architect the existing architecture and infrastructure to enable things like 5G networking, is how we go from being bolted on to being integrated from day one. And the other part is establishing this culture, right? So the MBOs in the organization have to change so that everyone needs to be accountable for the security, maturity, and posture of their organization.
That's it.
In addition to other metrics. But yeah, you have to create both organizational, cultural, and then infrastructural tools mm-hmm. to get there.
That's the shared responsibility we were talking about, right? Because yeah. now the networking team, the operations team, they're all responsible for some level of help desk right. is responsible yeah. for yeah. some level of security within the organization.
And once you do that, you go to the next level so that it's not just shared responsibility, but it's shared accountability.
Yes, I love it. So I love it. I love it.
I think that's the biggest paradox in security, that we rely upon vendors, service providers, yeah. and so many organic teams. That shared responsibility model looks like a racy matrix, right?
Right, right.
But at the end of the day, who is really accountable, right?
Yeah. Right.
Who really yeah. has skin in the game? And so I think we need to align accountability with mm-hmm. responsibility as well.
I agree.
Yeah. You know, so I was only 5 years ahead when I was trying to, do this at Tenable. I remember when I was doing the RSA, I think it was Singapore and then Abu Dhabi for a couple of years, talked about this unified, yeah. right? You have to unify all this stuff. But it's taken us 5 years to get to the point where we had a big enough event. I think, yeah. you know, COVID created an event, right?
Yeah.
That now, as we start to think about how we transformed through COVID and how we continue to transform, mm-hmm. that's now giving us the roadmap to do this over the next 5 years. But yeah, it's still taking time.
It was a forced, so number one, it was a forced shift in innovating, right? We had to shift into fifth gear really, really fast, but then it offered us a proof of concept that we can actually do it, right? We can do this. We can all be remote. We can all work remotely. It was something that was enlightening when I started having conversations with our customers' CFOs, right? Saying, we're going to start selling off our real estate. We don't need it anymore. We've been operating for 10, 12 months now. We don't need the real estate. Everybody's going to work from home, but help us secure it. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah. it's a shift. I mean, we had to rapidly innovate. We had to push some of our digital transformation, you know, into the project pipeline faster. But the last year, year and a half was the proof of concept that it can be done and it's the future. We're not going back.
Yeah, it definitely changed all types of things. Industrial psychology, the way mm-hmm. we think about work, yep. communications and play, all that genie's out of the bottle. It's mm-hmm. not going to change. And so yeah, that's going to be the way forward.
I finally got a catalyst. I feel vindicated.
Did you say Cadillac?
Catalyst. No, I don't drive a Cadillac. I drive Beamers. I'm a German guy. So let's talk a little bit about the fabric, because I think what's interesting is the way you've approached this unified fabric approach. Obviously, all your products snap into the mm-hmm. fabric, but you told me something like, 400 vendor integrations, mm-hmm. over yeah. 3,200 security products.
That's right.
Can be snapped into yep. the fabric. So yeah. kind of describe that because to Jason's point earlier, right? I've made certain investments that I need to maintain. Maybe I transition them later, but walk yeah. us through how that fabric comes together and how people can snap into it.
So there are 40 products that are integrated at an OS level. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, there are over 420 different vendor integrations into this fabric via APIs that they're writing so that it can integrate with this fabric with the FortiOS operating system. Those 420 technology integrations span 3,200 products, which means that your legacy environments, your current requirements, and your future requirements most likely are going to be supported. You're not going to strand an investment. But really what it means is that the level of complexity of managing that now is a common platform through which you can manage and operate. The reason why that's so important is this. Mm-hmm. SD-WAN allows you to have adaptive self-healing networking. That's great, but that also has to be integrated with your security. So as you scale up and down on the network to meet the elasticity of your cloud deployment, all of it works together so that it shifts and it's seamless, so that you mm-hmm. have those outcomes and experiences. That's what's so key. You've got something that is common across your legacy environment, those legacy data centers, and then into the largest public clouds in the world with a single unified view. And I think for me as an operator, that's what I'm really looking for. And the level of complexity is being managed across that span of products and that open development community, that's really kind of a differentiator in this marketplace.
Yeah, sure. And I'll add to that, Jonathan, the ease of the integration, right? Yeah. Because a lot of organizations say, oh, sure, you have an integration, but it's gonna be a pain in the ass to get that done. Yeah. I mean, they have their fabric connectors that integrates with Cisco, integrates with ServiceNow and ITSM, Aruba, right? So if you have a ClearPass NAC or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can start integrating with your other security, your wireless, your ITSM line of business application systems. Their fabric connector is very versatile, very, I mean, honestly, it's so deep and wide in what it can do. It's a level of ease of administration as well. It's not very complicated to get the other applications and systems connected into the fabric. It's huge, right?
Because
don't want to be spending a lot of overhead to get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jonathan, go ahead, Adrian, because I'm going to go off on a tangent for a little while. So finish your thought.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to share a quick anecdote. You know, just backing up with what Jason was finishing up saying there. You know, I've had to manage SIMs before and build parsers and maintain those parsers, and the amount of overhead can get really unwieldy. And when I was consulting, and I had a consulting company, we were doing pen testing, purple teaming, that kind of thing. When somebody would just be really good, like when we'd have a really hard time finding much of anything on a pen test, you know, we'd really dig into their stack and see what they had. And the one thing that they always had in common was not a whole lot.
Yep.
In terms of security products, like they would maybe have five things. Mm-hmm. And one of those things would be a big platform that could do a lot of stuff. And instead of having 30 little things that they didn't know much about, they had this one big platform and they knew every nook and cranny of that thing. They were using like 90% of the product instead of 5% of 30 other products.
That's the key.
And we would see that, that seemed to be the key. And these tended to be companies with smaller security teams, you know, so they really didn't have a choice. Like they needed to get the most out of mm-hmm. what they had in their environment.
But if you think about Adrian, it's true in anything we do these days, right? If you're trying to tackle 50 projects at once, you're not going to do them well. Right?
No.
So it's more of the quality versus quantity, right? So it's the same thing here.
If you had 50 kids, none of them would get your full attention.
That's right.
Ever,
absolutely. Right. So it's the quality. So if you have an ecosystem, a fabric like this that you can focus on and adopt 80, 90% of it, you're going to do it well. But if you have 100 products or 50 products that you're dealing with, you're not going to do any of them well, right? Because your time and your focus is it's too weak. It's all over the place. So
I spent a couple of years working on that Verizon data breach investigations report, right? That annual report that said that 80% of all the attacks that lead to data breaches would have been mitigated through simple to intermediate controls, right?
Mm, yeah.
So if you're running an average of 68 security products, which is the average day in the US,
you're not going to do any of them well.
And it killed me every year to see that we were missing on basics because we lacked the visibility and lacked the integration to implement and execute these simple to intermediate controls.
That's it. And that's at the end of the day.
We're losing on.
Right. And at the end of the day, that's why I made a choice, and a lot of executives are making the choice, right, to say, I want to consolidate down because I'm going to get better outcomes out of a consolidated platform than I am having all of these magic quadrant stuff out there in my ecosystem, right? I'd rather consolidate it down and do it well.
Mm-hmm. But you should consolidate down with products that are on the magic quadrant. Like
but one ecosystem on the magic quadrant, right?
Right. Well, so that is my tangent. What does this mean for the security industry as a whole? You know, we know there's close to 3,000 security vendors in the space because with the work that Adrian's doing in the labs, you know, we're categorizing close to 10,000 products in the industry.
Yeah.
I mean,
over 10.
Oh, so,
my God.
We've added more.
How does this, if the CISO, right, and the C-suite says, look, I want unified products, I want integrated products, what does this do to things like the VC in the PE markets and all these new vendors popping up to solve the next widget in security, right? I mean, does it change or not?
It does. In my opinion, I met with a private equity company earlier this year, and I said, I hate to tell you this, but I meet with typically 400 to 500 CISOs and their teams every year. And not one of them said, I want another point defense product.
Right.
You know, yeah. No absolutely. One wants another product.
Nope.
What they're looking for are ways to better utilize what they have today, mm-hmm. to consolidate, to streamline, to get better visibility. So it has profound effects on the industry, yeah. because now we can demonstrate, look, security cannot operate as a separate silo. It has to be integrated with networking, which is increasingly SD-WAN. And by the way, like we're the only next generation firewall that has an organically mm-hmm. developed and integrated SD-WAN capability. That's on the Gartner Magic Quadrant. There's nobody else like mm-hmm. that. And so, yeah, it does change that. So, you know, those 420 companies are now integrating with this fabric to create this ecosystem that is more readily used by the security community. So that's a big change moving forward. Yeah. And we move from point defense products to platforms to really security fabrics, right? Mm-hmm. Which integrate networking, security, and the compute. And that's very, very different.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good takeaway for CISOs and other people in the space, because when you think about, okay, there's a new technology that's on the market. Mm-hmm. One, do I need another point solution?
Right.
Yes or no? Probably no. But even if I do, is it going to integrate into my fabric?
That's it.
Right? Is it going to integrate into my investment to bring all this stuff together? And I think that changes the discussion with aspects of the industry around how important is integrations mm-hmm. into certain things, because yeah. otherwise I don't know how some of these yeah. point solutions survive.
So Matt, it changes the dynamic though, because the first question is, does, for me, right, because I was a Fortinet shop, does Fortinet provide that service? That's the first question, because I want it integrated into my ecosystem.
Right.
I want something that mm-hmm. Fortinet provides.
Yep.
So it's attached to the fabric natively. Yeah. So that's question number one. And if the answer is yes, all right, let's go have the conversation. If the answer is no, then you have to start looking at, does this snap into the fabric that I have?
Right. Yeah.
Well, and to be honest, you know, I think a lot of the times, instead of buying stuff, you know, a lot of products I see out there, I see a lot of companies that have builders on staff, like in the amount of time it takes to engage with the vendor and do a POC, mm-hmm, they could have mm-hmm. just written a script and integrated it into what they already had. Right. And you don't have to deal with all that management overhead. Right. So I think there's not enough build versus buy conversation as well.
Yep.
Yeah, I just think it's a very interesting paradigm, because we've seen so much investment going into the cybersecurity industry. Mm-hmm. We see funding announcements every week. We're going to cover at least a half a dozen tomorrow on Enterprise Security Weekly. Yeah. And the question is that model sustainable when the CISOs just want integrated solutions and a unified experience?
At the end of the day, the metrics and the reporting prove that one unified ecosystem works better. Yeah. That's because it. The outcomes are better.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So guys, the object of the exercise with the CISO is a reasonable level of care and security, right?
That's it.
They ask you after a breach or a disruption, what did you know, when did you know, and what mm-hmm. did you do about it, and was that reasonable? Is it reasonable to operate 68 different security products and not really have good visibility into your current state? I would say no.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. Absolutely not.
So the RSA theme is resilience, but I think the tagline should be don't go chasing waterfalls.
I love it.
Don't go over those waterfalls, you know? Right.
Yeah. Any final comments? I mean, you love this technology.
What? At the end of the day, I bought in a while ago and it provided the outcomes that I was looking for. So number one, thank you to Fortinet for innovating and creating that environment that I could look at an ecosystem and build it, right? I would say for folks who have not dipped their toe in the Fortinet water yet, do a proof of concept. You know, ask the team to come in, do a POC, look at how the fabric can make your ecosystem better, stronger, more resilient, and provide you the context that you're looking for. I mean, I'm a living example of that.
Yeah, and me too. I mean, I operated it for 12 years in the Fortune 2000 and in the intelligence community, that type of environment. And I came here because it works.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, as an operator, it is so refreshing to get to work with technology that actually works as advertised.
It's almost like you can't believe it.
Right.
It's to the point where you're like, no way, that can't be true. and then you proof it, you look at it, and I'm telling you, it delivers.
And I was like, I'll put my name on that any day.
That's right.
Right. See, Jonathan, you didn't even have to sponsor this segment. We just had to invite Jason, and he sold it for you.
Been there, lived it.
You know, that's the thing. It's, once you've lived it and used it and been burned by other technologies, it's you know, you want to go out and show the world, hey, there's something that works, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us on Business Security Weekly.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have fun, guys.
Thank you. To learn more about Fortinet and how it can help you build a unified security fabric, please visit securityweekly.com/Fortinet. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you next week on Business Security Weekly.